Oh, he's planning on upgrading. That's very progressive. Yeah. Okay. Anyone on 2001? Oh, he's still got his hand up. Gee, you must be exciting to be friends with. All right. Have you heard of Twitter? No? No, you haven't. Got to have some fun with you. All right.
I'm up for it.
He's up for it. All right. Where are you from? From South Africa. Right, okay. Well, I'll leave that one alone. All right. Okay. So I went to Johannesburg. I did a session there, and as a thank you gift, they gave me a ticket to Madagascar, which I'd only ever seen on the map. And that was a very interesting experience. Very nice. So, except the speaker lady who was organizing it, she got her window smashed in by some guy at the traffic lights. So it's a bit of a scary experience. Yes, lucky I was with her, I saved her. Yeah. Okay. So tell me, before I kick this off, what are some of the things you'd love to see today? Or if you're on, say, Visual Studio 2001, what would you love to see? Tell me some things that really matter to you.
Color.
Color. Oh, gee. I will. The big ticket items. Okay. All right. I will talk about that, and you'll see what's going on there. What else?
Debug.
You want a better debugging experience, okay? Anything specific about that? Right, okay. So he wants to debug right through the whole stack. Good. I had a very interesting conversation with the boss of this whole thing. His name's Brian Harry. And there was a discussion about how much more investment we keep putting in all these unit testing tools. And his comment was, he believes that that the primary investment should always go in debugging and unit testing secondary. And the reason for that is he believes that the debugging experience is very, very important. In fact, he gets his guys before they check in that one of these parts of the definition of done is always that they must step through the code they've just written. Just purely to do a sanity check, because it's amazing how many times that you actually have just written some code and you're pretty sure how it would work, but when you watch the path, it goes a bit different to what you thought. So he always thinks that's very important. Any other things you care about? So Mr. 2001 wants to check that the upgrade actually works. Okay, yep. We all upgraded a long time ago, so it doesn't worry us. So he wants to upgrade from 2008 to 2010. So yeah, there were a few problems, but nothing insurmountable. I'm not covering upgrading today. JavaScript tools. You want some JavaScript tools. Okay, so I've got some goodness there. Anything else?
PowerShell.
Okay. It's getting more and more popular. All right, I will cover a tiny bit of that. ALM, okay. How many people are practicing ALM, going through the stack from beginning to end? Okay, all right. There's one guy. There's some other opportunities here for, you know, application lifecycle management consulting in New Zealand. So how many people are using the testing tools, Test Manager and stuff? Not too many, like 6 or 7, okay. So we've been using that for some years now, and it's pretty compelling. I think it's actually got better in this version, so I'll talk about that briefly. Anything else? And put your hand up. Louder.
Performance monitoring.
You're not going to believe that, but performance was the number one issue before our colors turned up. Okay. Okay, any others? So deployment, okay. Right, oh, creating MSIs. Oh, I don't have any good news for you on that one. Microsoft don't create MSIs in 2012 anymore, and you're gonna have to use a third party tool for that one. I'm sorry about that. Okay, never mind. All right, let's kick this thing off. Today I'm just going to be covering all the things I think are there's a lot in Visual Studio 2012, and I think it's interesting that when I talk to devs about this, they say there's nothing really that much new in 2012, except you removed all my colors. And I think you'll find by the end of this session that's a bit of an understatement. There's way too much that I could put in here, even briefly. But I'll try to cover off the big ticket items that some of the guys in our office thought were important and some of the things I thought were important. Okay, so here are some of the things I'm just going to cover. We'll talk about some web developer friendliness. I want to talk about IntelliTrace and some feedback tools. But before that, I'm just going to go through some history and some IDE improvements. One of the themes that Brian Harry and his team had was trying to make developers raving fans. Okay, so they were very interested in all the little niggly things that would make the experience better, included performance, and obviously, they weren't in charge of the color decision. Okay. All right, so there's a lot you'll see in the UI and in searching everywhere. And we'll talk some performance tweaks. Quickly about myself, that's me and my little girls. And I work at a company called SSW. We're a gold partner in Sydney. I spend most of my time performing software audits, being a Scrum Master. I'm a Microsoft Regional Director. There's three of them in Australia, and there's a couple in New Zealand, Jeremy Boyd and Chris Old. I'm an ASP Insider MVP. I was actually MVP of the year last year. And that's my Twitter. All right. So, 2002, sir. This is what you work in day in, day out. We had web forms and XML web services and Windows forms. And then we got 2003, where we got .NET 1.1 and some enterprise templates, which no one really used, and Compact Framework, which no one used either. And then Visual Studio 2005, and we got .NET 2 and generics, which everyone uses. We got a local web server, so we didn't have to put up with IIS. And 2008, I had to Google for these images because I couldn't find them. I should have just called you up and got a couple of images. Then we got .NET 3.5, Link, the Link expressions and Link to SQL. So we all started using Link to SQL until Link to Entities came out. We got some JavaScript IntelliSense. And in our last version, 2010, we got .NET 4, F Sharp. Anyone using F Sharp? No one? Well, that was a waste of time. Then there was Silverlight, another waste of time. And parallel extensions. Anyone using parallel extensions? A few? Okay. Hopefully there'll be a few more soon. We got the Quick Search, which is that Navigate 2. And IntelliTrace. Anyone using IntelliTrace? Okay, a handful. All right, good. Hopefully more of that to come. All right, 2012, this is what we get. We get .NET 4.5, ASP.NET MVC 4. Who's doing web forms? Web forms, primarily web forms. Okay, so who's doing primarily MVC? Whoa, okay, so three times doing MVC than web forms. That's very progressive, very good. We're pretty much doing everything MVC these days. We've got HTML5 support, parallel computing. We can do Metro apps for Windows 8, okay? Who's keen and excited about that? Okay, so we've got half the room, that's good. Since that court case, which I'm sure I'm not allowed to talk about court cases, but the only winner out of that was Apple at this point in time, but I think the winner for a sideline winner would be Microsoft, because that's going to be seen potentially in the future as quite a good decision not to go down the Android path for Nokia, and it should be, if you look at their stock price, it's up quite a bit since that court case, so it might be seen as a great strategic decision to choose Microsoft rather than Android and avoid all those problems. Actually, in the court case, they held up a Windows phone and said, this is an example of doing it without copying Apple, which was, I thought, pretty good. Anyway, we've got a new solution, Explorer, over on the right-hand side. you'll see that we now have this different type of experience. They're called pages, and the main headings, you'll see hubs. So then we have easy way to use sockets and portable class libraries, lots of uppercase, and it's a little bit too gray for some people. Okay. So that was the actual RC. What they didn't mention was in the RC, everyone was complaining about it, and they did put a couple of little bits of color back in. But what they didn't tell anyone is they've removed all the color from IntelliSense, which is really annoying. So it's very black and white. Does this upset anyone? Oh, most of the room. Okay. All right. Okay, we won't mention that too many times. So I'm sure I meant to mention fast and fluid lots of times. So if I forget, just remind me. Okay. So the new UI is very fast and fluid. And we've got this new, it's not called a Metro look anymore, I'm meant to remind you, you don't say Metro look, it's called the modern UI style look. The modern UI style, that's not actually correct, it's meant to be modern UI dash style, I think, okay? So just be very careful, you know, whether you use the dashes or not. Anyway, just get used to using Control Shift H, which Microsoft still need to do on some of their pages. All right. So moving along, I was only screwing with you. This is the color, okay? See, there is some color. And look, IntelliSense even has some color, all right? No more whinging, all right? All right. Is that good? So you can see little bits of color around, green, see? And you even got it in IntelliSense. All right. So it could have been much worse. See, I set your expectations really low. All right. All right, so let's talk about search. And I will just I'll open Visual Studio. You've got a nice, cool, fast and fluid UI, which I should have opened up prior to here, which that would have been smart. Never mind. You'll get to see that it's much faster loading than before. All right. I'll see what I can close here. All right. So one of the things that I like about this, I get to show you the start menu. That's pretty cool. Like, has anybody ever read a single thing on their start page in all these years? Okay. Well, things might change now because you've got videos to watch. And I was going I wasn't actually planning on showing you this, but I will now. But I won't click on the link because I've been trying to use the internet while I've been here in New Zealand, and it's not very good. And I just had a warning from the AV guys, don't use the internet. All right. Okay, so no internet. But what I do think is cool, not only are these videos quite cool, and actually I should check. How many people prefer watching a video than reading a web page on a feature like this? Okay, so maybe 70% of you, that's good. When you get into certain features, like I'll just go into My Work, this was a thing that wasn't in the beta, you'll see these little videos around the place. So if you want to know how to use My Work, you've got these little videos. And they're pretty nice professional videos, they show you the main features, and I think that they're, I hope that's something that Microsoft continue investing in, because it's quite good. Anyway, moving along, what I would like to do is open up a solution. So let me just open up a solution, and I'll choose this one. So I'll just search here. See in here, controller, and it will just filter down. Okay, it's called searching. And so, yeah, this is just how this works. You'll see this everywhere. And where else could I do it? Well, I could do it in add references. Let's just add a reference. And up here. So in all dialogues, it's Control E to search. Okay? And I can just come up here. Oh, by the way, look at that. I'm on the comm tab. Now, in past presentations, I've always made sure that I never clicked on the comm tab. It caused me lots of dramas. I meant to be here, but I could just search here. So, okay, so it's very fast and fluid. See, okay, Control E. And by the way, if you didn't know, it's the same thing here. Control E takes you up there, so it's the same. All dialogue boxes, Control E. When you're not in one, it's Control apostrophe will take you up there. Okay, but you'll be able to see all those without even me telling you because it actually has the little tips in there. All right. So I think there's probably a few other things that you'll notice it in other places, such as project, add existing item, and here we go. Okay, I can see. All right. And there we go. All right, so it's that everywhere. I think that should have been there a long time ago, but anyway, it's there now, so I won't complain anymore. All right, so you can search everywhere, Solution Explorer, Team Explorer, add new items, add references, and there it is. Okay, Solution Explorer, Team Explorer. Oh, that's something we should have had a long time ago, isn't it? We can now search for a work item. We could enter work items before, but we couldn't search. How many people are using TFS for their bug tracking? Whoa, the majority, so 80%. And who's using Jira? Okay, oh, good show of hands, maybe 20%. Any others? On time, who's on time? A few. What are you using? I'll have to know this one. Mantis, the plain text system. That's great. So it doesn't have rich text, does it? No, he doesn't know what that rich text is. But anyway, it's putting bold and things in. All right, so Team Explorer. So add new items, here you go. I always think that Control E should be changed to a Control F. I think it would, and if you notice, you know, outside, Control F actually does work here as well. But in Visual Studio, it's always Control E, which I hope they change one day. And does it work on the toolbox? Pretty sure it does, so let me double check that for you. Yep, there you go. So, and actually, the loading times for the toolbox and all that type of stuff has been greatly improved, except in this case, I've got Telerik. And it's loading that up. All right, I'll come back to that. So, adding references is better. You'll notice over on this, on here, we've now got these things. The actual pane is called a page. These bold headings are called hubs, and the hyperlinks are called actions. Okay, I prefer them called links. But so this is the terminology. You'd say, go to Team Explorer and then click the Work Items Hub, and this will open the Work Items page. Then in the Queries section, this is a section, expand the current sprint and open the test cases query. I mentioned that to you because I got in trouble for using the wrong terminology, and if you ever have to write any documentation for your team, that's the right way to do it. All right. All right, some other things as a dev you don't want to do. You don't want to hit F1, do you? Anyone like hitting F1? I've never understood. How can it be quicker to open up Google, type in your term, it goes across to MSDN at Microsoft, comes back, and that's quicker than hitting F1 and searching a local hard drive. Okay, anyway. You never want to click com, that's been solved, and you don't want to close solutions. I don't know if you're aware, but there's like a 30-45 second unresponsiveness if you've got a significantly large project. Usually don't care because you're about to go home. But anyway, all those problems can be solved with coffee. And Microsoft have solved the F1 problem. This is how they solved it. I noticed this none. You can install no documentation now. Hallelujah. All right, isn't that a great solution to solving the problem? Okay, so now if you choose none and you press F1, it just opens up MSDN. All right, and it works quite nicely if your internet connection is good. And you know the other good thing? The other good thing is when you do that, it will open up your browser of choice. So if you like Chrome, Chrome is the new browser, okay? if I'm on here, and I'll just press F1, it will open. Oh, in this case, it hasn't opened that up. That's because it's looking at this guy. I'll just change this to Chrome, and F1. And even on a slow internet connection, that's working fine. Okay, gee, that's pretty fast if you ask me. It's fast in Australia. All right. Anyway, and of course, the procedure should be Alt F12 that you first look in your object browser, have a look around, and if Alt F12 doesn't work, then you go F1. Okay. So, all right. And in here, in this dialog, Control E doesn't work. You can tell because it didn't have the little tip there. So there's something they didn't finish. All right, so moving along, lots of performance tweaks. Loading the solution, I'm talking very large projects, which we suffered a fair bit of pain in. Loading the solution is definitely substantially faster. Adding references where you saw that was instantaneous. Opening the designer and all that type of stuff. Opening the toolbox. And it's all documented on this blog post, and I won't go to it now, but basically opening a large project is about twice the speed. They're talking about 90% improvements for opening large solutions with all the tool windows open and the designers open and stuff like that. All right, so adding references, good. All right, so let's talk about developer goodies. We've got in here, in developer goodies, we've got, it's more web developer friendly now. You're going to see lots more IntelliSense for CSS and HTML5. You can debug in any browser other than IE. Is that good? No? You're all using IE? No? Who's using IE as their primary browser? More, maybe half? Who's using Chrome? Well, more than half. Who's using Firefox? Firefox? Can I just see? Okay, so maybe 10 or 15% using Firefox. And any others? Anyone got some random ones? Safari. How did you get in here? All right. Very good. All right. So they've now got this thing called Page Inspector. And I'll go through that in a sec. But you'll see that there's HTML5 validation. All over the place, which is handy for learning. You got much better IntelliSense. You got a color picker, and actually, I might just show that one to you. So let me just go to the Solution Explorer, and. Have a look inside these views. I'll go to the detail one. Which one will I open? So if I just, you'll see in our IntelliSense, we've got lots more things that we can pick from, and a lot of these are HTML5. We've also got color pickers that will pop up here, and I'll show you all the classes from CSS. So let's have a look here. For example, this data one is HTML5. Content editable, so a content editable one, I think I dropped that in, I'll show you that. But here is some of the classes coming through, or the styles coming through from CSS. And here, all you have to do is start picking the colors, typing hash, and this picker will come up and you can pick anything from it or insert. All right. So, I'll just show you about the debugging tools. Obviously, you can use any different browser now for that. And there's this new one called Page Inspector. How many people are already familiar with what Page Inspector is? All right, just five of you. All right, that's all right. Good, so I'll show you that page inspector. I will just come back here, and I'll just press F5, and that's just open up in Chrome like normal, and oh, I'd see in this case, it's not, yeah, like normal. Okay, so I will, not that, I'll just give that another go. I'll give that another go, hopefully. Is that still running? Okay, let's give that another go. I'll fire that up, F5 again. I just want to double check. Okay, well that's working well. I will do, I'll show you something else then. We have, in here we can choose which one we want, and these are, have all the different browsers you have installed, or you can choose Page Inspector. So I'll just choose Page Inspector, and I'll just run that guy. And in this case, when you've chosen Page Inspector, it will open, oh goodness gracious. Oh. Sorry, thank you. All right. All right, F5 again, hopefully. Oh. All right. So, what's its problem?
Close the page.
Oh, okay. I'll close them all. And by the way, as you click through these things, you'll notice that the different page here just shows here without opening. Okay, it's got some fancy name and escapes me at the moment. All right, so I'll just F5 that. All right. Hallelujah. All right, F5 works. Now, what we're in here is a different type of view. And this is called the Page Inspector view, and I can start debugging. So let's just assume that I'm looking here, and I'm thinking, well, I haven't logged on here. Why is that guy's photo showing? Now, I can click Inspect. So it's just like Firebug. I'll just try to resize this so you can see a bit more. Because I'm on a very small screen at the moment. So, as I hover over, see this image here? See the page in the top right-hand corner? It says underscore layout. And if I hover down here, it's now profile.cshtml. And so you can see that things will change as I hover over different things. So if I'm wondering why this guy is there, not only is it showing me down here, the appropriate piece that is meant to be highlighted. I can see that the class is profile image, probably not that useful at this point in time, and I'd have to go Control F just to find where that is. So I'll just scroll down there and you can see that's the class, and I can probably just change bits and pieces on the fly here. Okay. This is just Firebug, essentially. But the magic over here is I'm looking inside the Razor syntax. And so I could be having a look here and working out, whoa, that div, you know, I could start changing things here, or I could just kill it if I'm trying to get rid of that guy's image. If I go Control X, I'll just kill that. And it will say, look, the files have been changed. You need to go Control Alt Enter. And we'll reload without him. Let's just double check, and that's kind of this style. All right. So, how many people think that's a cool feature? Okay, most of you, 80-90%. That's cool. Anybody else got any other tools that help them a lot in this type of MVC debugging? No? All right. Then I will. I'll show you some. So I just showed you this page inspector, where you can just start viewing on the fly, Firebug style. And essentially, you just click inspect. You select the DOM elements, and you'll see the HTML that's appropriate, and then you'll see the styles over there or the Razor source. Okay. So. One thing that I wish, and I have already asked the team about this, is when I click on that profile image, it should go down to the right style in there, okay? And if you have a look today, you will see that Chrome and Firefox, both as you're in it, will show you the right one. But what they're not giving you is the Razor syntax, so it's still a vastly more compelling feature than this. So it makes me start thinking about how are you guys going to be debugging from this point forward. And I think there's lots of opportunities here where we will start improving the order that we start debugging. I think the first thing people start doing now is they put a breakpoint on and they start stepping through the code. And I'm trying to think through some different scenarios. So here's my scenarios to you. You got a date picker and it's not showing on an MVC page for a date field. And you're thinking, that's weird. So what would be going on here? So you have this this page inspector, which would be the first port of call to have a look whether that solves the problem. The second port of call, if that doesn't help, is to use a tool called Glimpse. How many people have heard of the tool Glimpse? Just 5 or 6 of you. Okay. So I might, this is not a Microsoft tool, but I might show you anyway. It's, let me just see if I can find this. Here we go. And there's just a tiny bit I'd like to show you. It's a, I just realized I don't have sound. So this demo wouldn't work well. I might just ask the AV guys if I could get sound, and I'll come back to this bit, because I think that Glimpse is worth just showing you 30 seconds of it. All right. Anyway, so there's Glimpse, and it will show you a little bit more than that page inspector tool, because you get to see which controllers are being touched. Okay? So that would be kind of handy. And then the final point at this point in time was be step through the good old breakpoints. And then you're looking into this, inside the C# code, to what's going on. You got another scenario. So obviously that procedure that I just showed you, this is not very long. I can move my computer if you want. Yep. All right. So I'll just try to go back here. And I'll just go to, say, 1. And he is actually talking.
But Glimpse isn't limited to just graphs. It can show us stuff. For example, if we take a look at execution, I can take a look at every action filter, action method, and action result that ran, in the order that it ran, to render this page. So you can see here we have a few different action filters. My action method is actually highlighted here in yellow on the controller, the store manager controller, we call it color. And after that, a view result ran. This view result actually made some child action calls. So we can see that entire, MVC.
Go forward.
Made requests to the web form view engine, checking in its cache, but could not find the view that we were looking for. It then looked in the Razor view engine's cache and also could not find the view engine. Went back to the WebForms view engine, said not to look in cache, so we looked in all the standard places on disk. We were not able to find the view that we're looking for here. Finally, we went back to the Razor view engine, did not look in cache, and we were able to find our view. And in this case, we passed in a dynamic proxies.album. This is an EF model, and here's the values that were passed in. So we get an actual glimpse at what the model was that was passed into this view. I used to be a web forms developer, and one of the nice things we had in web forms was the ability to do trace.write. We've lost that ability in MVC because we don't really have a place to show tracing information anymore. Well, with Glimpse, we've added that back in. At any point in your code, you could do a trace.write or a debug.write, and the trace dialog, the trace plugin will show you that. The trace tab will show you that information here. And you can see that we have full support for categories, and we will highlight them appropriately as needed. So that's a quick little look at some of the standard things that Glimpse can do out of.
All right, so that's a little bit of an intro. Most of the guys in our office are using this tool, so I would definitely give it a go and see if you enjoy it. I'm dropping away from code, but I do want to mention one other thing to you. There's the async keyword. I don't know if it's going to be that. It'll be that widely used, but it definitely is something you need to be abreast of. It's got the ability there in the right circumstances to save you a hell of a lot of code, all right? So just have a look at async and wait and how that works. All right, okay. All right, so this second scenario, I just wanted you to be aware that what I just told you there wasn't, you know, the golden rule of all debugging. You don't use Page Inspector and you know, for every single problem. If you've got possibly that problem where the photo that is showing when they haven't logged in, it's highly likely that scenario I told you is probably not the best scenario because the wrong data has already been returned. The only thing I'm really doing in that particular example is hiding something that's returned already. So it might be better to think, well, that data's been returned. Let's use Glimpse in that case to see which controllers are being hit. And then if that doesn't yield the results, then it's stepping through the code. So it's this process potentially before. Anyone got any comments on that? No? Okay, all right. I want to talk to you about IntelliTrace. Now, there was only half a dozen of you using it, and that's a damn shame because IntelliTrace is very compelling. So IntelliTrace should be used by your testers, and part of the reason that maybe that number was so low for IntelliTrace is because the other question I asked you, which was how many people are using MTM, which is Microsoft Test Manager, was very low. I think there was only a handful of that as well. But the perfect scenario, if you guys are practicing agile techniques, is as a user story or a PBI is complete with all the tasks and it's checked in, that PBI is now ready for testing. Scrum says that a sprint is not even considered complete unless it's been passed by a tester. So what you want to have is a life cycle that is always got the latest PBI coming up and they're testing it. It's a very, very difficult problem to solve, to work religiously like that. And I've been trying for some years and it's still really hard, especially if you're dependent upon clients and other people like that, which you know will do it in their own free time. But one of the good things about IntelliTrace is it removes the huge amount of time of fixing a bug. What's the single biggest amount of time that is used for fixing a bug? Yeah, reproducing that thing. So an iTrace file, that Safari guy will be very happy, it's called iTrace. That file records everything the tester did to that point, or when they've hit the exception. So it's got the entire stack trace. And it actually was called historical debugging because one of the things you can do is step backwards after you've hit the error. So I have this belief that one day, it's a kind of a bit of a dream, I guess. My dream is that you only ever call a bug if it's got an iTrace file associated with it, which means it's already been reproduced. Like one of the things I always tell customers, don't call it a bug unless you can reproduce it and it crashes to code, and it does, and we've got this big long list of all things that it must be to be called a bug, okay? Because that way we don't make any bugs, okay? Pretty good, hey? Any of you guys define what a bug is in your teams? Nope? Oh, a couple, okay. So I just think that when you enter into TFS a bug or a PBI, it's very arbitrary. You can choose whatever you want. And so I like to say it must be, ideally, you've got an iTrace file. So one of the things that we couldn't do is we couldn't run IntelliTrace on a production machine. So if you're getting an error on a production machine, you were not allowed to use IntelliTrace. It was against your terms and conditions. There was not a very easy way of doing it anyway. Okay, unless you want to install Visual Studio on the machine and start debugging, that'd be pretty cool. That's been solved now. So they allow you to install it on production machine, and I'll show you a little bit about it. So then you've got the iTrace file, and don't forget, the more times you use things like async and parallel extensions and all these type of things, you're going to hit bugs that never happen in test, okay? And these bugs that happen in production are going to be extremely expensive to try to get to the source of what that bug is. And they're going to be very painful. So hopefully this ends up being a really cool thing that we use more and more. It's at this time, what I'm talking about is a fringe thing. But the iTrace file gets to the developer. He locates the source of the error, inspects the variables at runtime. He can see what was happening on the production machine. He can look at what the SQL queries were running, etc. Okay, so this is how this procedure works. They give you this IntelliTrace collection cab. Now, of course, this can be given with your installer. If we're talking Windows Forms, or we're talking WPF, anything that has an MSI where you install it. I'm not that early. So he's finished very early. Or he's doing some good demos. Okay, so this cab file can be installed with your Windows app or your WPF app, and now you've got a situation where if it hits an exception, it could automatically send it back to your machines. But I'm more interested in the web scenarios, and this is the cab file. You install that onto you copy it onto your server. You use PowerShell, and you expand that PowerShell, and it will expand. Then you import that, or kind of load it, so import the module, and then you turn it on. You say start IntelliTrace collection, okay? So this is the procedure of how this works. Once that's happening, you reproduce the error. So let's just say you browse to the page that error is happening on, or reproduce that error in some way, and then you stop the IntelliTrace. And you'll have a fairly large file at that point in time, and then you ship that back to the developer. So the developer will get this iTrace file, he'll open it up into Visual Studio, he'll just double click and he'll see this. And he'll probably land on these few things here, these object reference not set to an instance. And he'll probably go down to the one that has his code. In this case, it was the third one, fabric and fiber.web, avoiding all the Microsoft ones because he can't control that. And then, so in this exception data, he'll look at that error, and then he's got this call stack down here. And from that point on, he'll see this button down here called Start Debugging. He'll click Start Debugging, and then you'll get into the error. And it will go to the error with all the variables set, and you'll see in this case the address was null. Okay, and that's why that's happened. And here is the IntelliTrace, what do we call that? There's a question for you. What do we call this right inside? The IntelliTrace hub? Page. Yes, that's correct. IntelliTrace page. Get that lingo right. And that's kind of how that works. And now we can. There's no more non-reproducible bugs in production. Yes, sir? What sort of performance hit? Well, I would describe it as substantial. Okay? So if you were thinking of just leaving it running, then probably not a good idea. It's doing a lot of collecting, and I should have probably used the answer, it depends, because you do have all the things that you're collecting. So you've got a big, long list. But you know, most developers, in my experience, have no idea which one it might be, so they just turn it all on. Okay? And then it's going to be slow. Yes, sir. The question is, if you've got a high use server, is there a way of restricting this just to collect on one IP?
Yeah,
I don't know the answer to that, but I can get the answer for you. The guy's name's Larry Gruger, and just send it, and I'll loop him in. I don't know about that. But I will tell you that there is another solution from Microsoft, or from a Microsoft third party, from Preemptive. And they have a different approach, and it's part of it. So you can use this, for grabbing everything that was going on that machine. But the Preemptive model is basically a bit of code you put in your exception, and it will grab more information from the call stack when the exception occurs. So you can have that all the time, where this is start, reproduce the error, stop. Now I've got everything that the developer could ever need. Okay? Any other questions? Good. Or, no, so the IntelliTrace will record everything up until when the exception occurs. Yes, that's right. Yeah, you can roll back. So you can use it while you're debugging. You don't actually have to use it in the scenario I've given you. I've only told you about this is because this wasn't possible in the prior version. We've already had IntelliTrace for a while that can do a lot of things. I'm just showing you the new one it can do in production. So I wouldn't mind asking you guys, because this is a brand new thing and I don't know how you guys are processing it. I know it's the first time, but how many people think that is an incredibly cool piece of technology? Okay, so, all right, so 80 or 90% of you think it's absolutely cool. I'm going to tell you that the chance of you using it is much smaller than you probably think. And here is the daily workflow, and this has been available for you for some years now, and this is what you can do. So you can use the current version, Visual Studio 2010, with Test Manager, and you've got... If your testers are using MTM, Microsoft Test Manager, and they're using, they've got IntelliTrace turned on, you've already got the first stage of this, and you can use it today. So testers report the bug, and it comes to the developers with an iTrace file. How many people are already doing that today? Okay, one guy, is it? One girl. Okay, there we go, guys. Being showing up, it's not very good. We've got this guy on our television now. He's a Kiwi. His name's Paul Henry. And he says the most appalling things. And I can't believe there's anybody watching him. It's incredible. So he's a Kiwi. And apparently he was on one of your talk shows or something. But he is, I don't know how he got a job in Australia. He got kicked out, did he? Oh, right. I hadn't heard that one. All right. He's a shocker. He keeps getting reported. We have this show that goes on Monday night. It's called Media Watch. It brings up all terrible things the media is doing. And he's on it all the time. Like, and he's this close to being, you know, excommunicated from the country. But everybody's just watching this train wreck. It's amazing. Anyway, I don't know. I saw that lady, I was going to make some joke and I thought of Paul Henry. All right. But yes, very good. I'm very impressed. And how's it going? All right. I just realized it's not a lady. That's worse than Paul Henry. All right. It's the lights. All right. So... how am I going to recover from that? All right. So testers report a bug with the iTrace file. WorkUm's created. Developers open that iTrace file. Now, here is the problem, the very bad problems that happen on the production servers that we can't reproduce. So what you want to do is, rather than the first time this thing happens on the production server, is you know, go straight, oh, you know what we need? We need that IntelliTrace in production. I just want to just set the expectations more accurately, where you want to first check all event logs, okay? If the event logs aren't there, then you have to ask the developers, why aren't you using Elmaha? Because there should be a bloody good reason. How many people are already logging things with Elmaha or something similar? Okay, oh, that's great. So just over half. Then you can turn off custom errors on the production box. You could ask the sysadmin if you can have remote debugging, just as a test, because if they say yes, you should get them sacked. And then, at that point, if you cannot resolve it that way, then you need Visual Studio 2012, and you need this feature of IntelliTrace in production. So I just give you that just so you've got some context. All right, exploratory testing. Okay, so I'm just going to... I won't go through this demo because I'd have to open up MTM, but here it is. So it's just called Test Manager. And you're not going to believe this. This really drives me up the wall. It's probably a small thing that shouldn't upset me. But see how that Microsoft Test Manager has 2010 in it? They've now given us one that doesn't have the URL, their number. So it doesn't say Microsoft Test Manager 2012. It's a very small thing, but it really drives me crazy. Anyway, so the next version that's released will also be called Microsoft Test Manager. You won't know which one's the new one. But hopefully they'll give it a new icon next time. Anyway, the coolest thing about this exploratory testing, or about Test Manager, is that we have this exploratory testing. So you'll see this do exploratory testing. So the problem with MTM, and I know only a few of you have used Microsoft Test Manager, is that you have to set up the test case or the test plan, and then you've got the test plan, test suite, and then test steps, and you've got to have all the steps done. So you can tell the tester exactly what to test and all the steps to go through. So there's a fair bit of infrastructure to get that up and running. My dream is to, as a user story is finished, that user story has a test plan and test steps, so the tester goes through the quintessential steps, but then does exploratory testing on that feature and says, look, I've clicked around, I've done lots of other things associated with that feature, it's done. So all you really want them to do is see a user story is finished and then start exploring and testing. And that's what this feature is kind of all about. Okay? It still has a few things that I wish it would do that it doesn't, but it's much closer to what I wanted some time ago. All right, so this is the feature. So you need 2012 if you're going to do exploratory testing. Now, there's this feedback tools. Now, this is... let me just think about this. I'll just see if I can... how much time do I have? So, I don't have long, but what I will tell you is when you ask someone for feedback now, the better approach is to go through and request feedback. And what this does when you request feedback is it sends an email to the people that you put in. So you end up with a form like this. You say select stakeholders. So you put all their email addresses here, and then you say what you'd like them to test. You can give them a web application, which means you just give them a URL. You can give them a client application, which means C / program files / northwind.exe. Or a remote machine. And then you tell them the things that you'd like them to test. And when they click that, when they get the email and they click the link, it does a click once installation of a tool. And it's actually a pretty cool tool, except for the name. It's called Microsoft Feedback Client. So I'm just guessing that a developer invented this name. And they get that email and then they start clicking through it. And when they answer things in here, obviously, it goes in as a work item, straight in. So it's straight on the backlog. And obviously, when you're using a tool like this, it's very hard to give a poor piece of feedback. It's very hard to give a bad bug report when you're using a tool like this because it puts a screen capture in. It actually can, if you ask for it, it gives you a video of exactly what they're doing so you can see all the steps. All right. So, Any questions on this before I move along, testing and all that type of stuff? Yes, sir. Can you plug it right into SharePoint? Well, SharePoint is a web application, so there's absolutely nothing wrong with you just giving that as a URL to SharePoint. I'm hesitant in answering you 100% because SharePoint works slightly differently. And as for an example, the load testing, the web load testing in Visual Studio 2010 and 2012 actually doesn't work with SharePoint, okay, because it does a few things differently. So Microsoft will be, I know this is on their backlog, but I can't give you timing, they will be releasing some extensions for SharePoint for load testing and other things to work. So my answer is going to be, I would expect that this tool would work, but some of the other things that you might be asking about relating to SharePoint are going to need an update. That's my guess. Okay. But you can, I am on that little internal team about that feedback, so you can definitely send me an email and I'll keep you in the loop. All right. One of the things I think was very, it's kind of funny how Microsoft sell this ALM from beginning requirements to development to testing to, you know, deployment. If you look at the whole thing, really, the things that have been missing have been the requirements, because there was no requirements, and deployment and deployment manager. So those things are missing. They've got everything perfect in the middle. So this PowerPoint storyboarding tool, how many people have given this a go? Oh, one person. All right. So I don't think I'll open it up and do much of a demo. But you'll see that there's a PowerPoint storyboarding here. And all it is an extra tab inside here. So I have been a lover of Balsamiq. And I've used Balsamiq for ages and ages. And when I saw this in PowerPoint, my first thing, I was in Raleigh, North Carolina, when I saw it. I thought, oh, I don't think I want it in PowerPoint. My requirements, I want to use the web, that's what I'm used to. But when I started using it, you know, I just dragged this start menu, oops, Stephen Sanofsky would be very upset with me. Start menus don't exist anymore. Well, when I drag this SharePoint thing in, and I want this calendar here, and you know, I can do a Windows phone, you know, I don't know how Windows phone would work in SharePoint, but you know, you never know, it might be the next version. Mobile SharePoint, there we go. So, but you can see that this is very easy to use, and the most beautiful part about this is when I'm ready to show the client, it's just F5, and we start clicking through here, and there's lots of animations I can make. When I click this guy, it goes to the other. If you want more details on this, Rob May is going to give a demo of how this all hangs together in his session. But I encourage you to do your requirements this way. Before you start writing code. You'll write better code if you do this first up. And one other tip I'll do is once the client says, yeah, that's good enough, start coding, print them all out and ask him to initial them all. Every time I do that, they give extra feedback. It's amazing. They just told me it was perfect, and then I asked them for their initial, and then they say, oh, I can change this and that, alignment's wrong and this and that. So that's good. All right. So I didn't cover everything in here. There was a lot that I had to drop. I would have liked to have shown you a few other things, but I do want to tell you that there's a lot in there. We've now got the .NET Framework 4.5, and it's all good to go. If you're not able to use TFS 2012 or install it, we've installed it and we've been using it for, I guess, a month or two. Use TFS Preview. Who's using TFS Preview on a real project? Not a single hand. That's amazing. One hand. Okay. So it does exist in New Zealand. That's good. We have been using it probably for 12 months or more on almost all our projects. So TFS Preview would be on most of our projects. And it works beautifully. It actually, the build stuff is absolutely awesome. It will fire up more build servers. It's just actually, Anthony Borton's going to demo that. So you'll see how cool the build is and how you're using the power of Azure to, you know, really bring your build times down. Now, I didn't talk about Windows Phone 8 and all the project templates that come with that. Time will tell how cool this ends up being, but at this point in time, I'm feeling stronger about Windows Phone 8 after all the other schmozzles. That's my phone, don't worry about that. Visual Studio comes with lots more tools about Azure. It has a much better offline experience, which I haven't showed you, but you know all those dialogues would pop up every time you lost the internet or gone away. You can do almost everything you can do with, say, Git and stuff, and there's also Git extensions now you'll see on Brian Harry's blog. But essentially, you can do pretty much everything except branch locally. Light Switch is kind of slightly cooler now because it all supports HTML5 instead of Silverlight. And it might be appropriate to at least get all the base tables up and running and all the lookup tables up and running so you can spend a lot more time on just the core pieces of functionality. So it might have its place. You're going to have better SharePoint development tools. Things will change very quickly when SharePoint 15 is released. We've got the backlog tools, which is in TFS preview. Got the storyboarding stuff. The MyWork stuff is, I'm going to let Rob cover that. That's pretty cool. We've got suspend and resume. That's on the MyWork. The boss comes in and says, hey, I want you to fix this important security thing. You've got all these tabs open, breakpoints, everything. You just say suspend and give it a name. It's just like a profile type thing. Close down, open up the other solution, get in, fix the problem, close it down, and then resume back to exactly where you were. And you can have plenty of those suspends. You got a much faster, cleaner unit test explorer. I think they run a million tests in 10 seconds or something. It's really much faster than it was before. We've got the exploratory testing and the feedback manager. And there's a whole lot of tools for code and architecture reviews, which I didn't cover, but you will see in here, and I'll do that in my other talk, talking about how you do a modern code architecture looking at all these guys. All right. So a few other resources. I write all these rules, so you can have a look at those. I've taken some resources from Microsoft, and I've done some interviews with some of the TFS team, and it's on tv.ssw.com. So in summary, we cover the history, IDE improvements, search, performance, what's that page inspector. We talked about IntelliTrace, the feedback tools. So with that, that's my email address, and you can send me an email anytime. I've got lots of I get lots of emails, so just make sure it's a good subject. But with that, thank you very much, guys.